This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by outsourcing around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. So when you buy from American Giant, you're taking a stand for hardworking people, local communities, and quality clothes. American Giant directly supports American manufacturers and ensures you aren't footing that tariff bill. Support American-made tariff-free clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust, Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Story one. It was just another long night on the job. Back then, I worked as a security guard in a SCIF, Sensitive Compartmented Information Facility, built during the Cold War. The place had a history, they said. I didn't pay much attention to that kind of talk. I just needed the paycheck. The building, though, had a way of getting under your skin. It was buried deep underground, a labyrinth of steel doors, concrete walls, and flickering fluorescent lights. It felt sterile, dead. Most of the time, I liked the quiet. But on some nights, it was too quiet, like the place was holding its breath. That particular night, exhaustion hit me harder than usual. The hours dragged, and I couldn't shake the heavy fog creeping into my head. The dim hum of the overhead lights wasn't helping. I could feel myself nodding off. I knew I had to get up, move around, do something to keep myself awake. So I started walking. I didn't have a plan, just figured I'd make a loop around the level and come back. My radio was clipped to my belt, and I kept my flashlight in my hand, just in case. The air in those tunnels always felt strange, like it was too still, too thick. My footsteps echoed off the concrete, sharp and hollow, and the sound followed me as I walked. As I turned a corner, I noticed something I hadn't seen before, a narrow hallway I'd never paid attention to. It was darker than the others, and the lights didn't seem to reach far down the passage. My curiosity got the better of me. I thought maybe I'd find a break room or an unused storage area where I could sit for a few minutes and wake myself up. The hallway seemed to stretch forever, and as I walked, the air grew colder. The walls were lined with old doors, some with rusted plaques that I couldn't quite read in the dim light. My flashlight flickered, but I ignored it. These tunnels weren't supposed to be used anymore, I reminded myself. but someone must have left them powered at some point. Right? The deeper I went, the stranger things felt. The air smelled old, like dust and decay, and the hum of the fluorescent lights above seemed to fade, replaced by an oppressive silence. I stopped for a moment and glanced behind me. The hallway stretched endlessly in both directions, but I couldn't shake the feeling that I wasn't alone. Then I heard it, a soft, distant sound. Tap, tap, tap. It wasn't like footsteps, not exactly. It was too deliberate, too measured. My hand tightened on my flashlight and I shone it ahead, but there was nothing, just more of the same empty corridor. I told myself it was probably just the building settling. Old places make noises, right? But the sound didn't stop. It grew louder, like it was coming closer. I picked up my pace, trying to shake off the unease creeping up my spine. But the faster I walked, the louder it got. Tap, tap, tap. I swung my flashlight behind me, expecting to see something, but the hallway was empty. My pulse was pounding now, and every shadow seemed alive, writhing just out of sight. I turned a corner, hoping to find a stairwell or a familiar landmark, but instead I found myself in a room that shouldn't have been there. It was large, circular, and completely out of place. The walls were lined with ancient, dust-covered filing cabinets, and in the center of the room was a table with chairs scattered around it. Papers were strewn across the table, yellowed with age, and an old rotary phone sat in the corner, the cord coiled like a snake. The whole room felt wrong, like it had been abandoned in a hurry and sealed away. I didn't want to touch anything, but my eyes were drawn to the papers. There were names, dozens of them, and dates that went back decades. Scribbled notes lined the margins, some in red ink, others in a shaky hand that looked almost frantic. I couldn't make sense of it. Then the phone rang. The sharp metallic trill cut through the silence like a blade, and I nearly dropped my flashlight. My first instinct was to run, but my legs wouldn't move. The sound echoed in the room, growing louder and more insistent until I couldn't take it anymore. I reached for the receiver with a trembling hand and lifted it to my ear. "Hello?" My voice barely came out. At first there was nothing, just static. But then I heard it, a faint whisper like someone was standing just behind me. "Get out!" I spun around, expecting to see someone there, but the room was empty. The phone went dead in my hand, and the silence that followed was deafening. My heart was racing, and I knew I had to leave. I didn't care where I ended up. I just needed to get out of that room. I bolted back into the hallway, my flashlight bouncing wildly as I ran. The air felt heavier now, pressing against me with every step. I didn't know where I was going, but I kept moving, turning corner after corner, praying I'd find my way back. Then the tapping started again. It was closer this time, louder, faster. I stopped in my tracks, shining my flashlight down the corridor ahead. The beam flickered, and for a split second, I thought I saw something. A shadow? A figure? I couldn't tell, but it was there, and then it wasn't. "Hello?" I called out, my voice cracking. No answer. Just the tapping, now echoing from behind me. I ran. I didn't care about the noise I was making or where I was going. I just needed to get away. My lungs burned and my legs felt like lead, but I didn't stop until I turned a corner and saw something familiar. A door I recognized, leading back to the main area. I stumbled through it, slamming it shut behind me. The tapping stopped. The silence was almost worse, but I didn't care. I made it back to my post, collapsing into my chair and gripping the edges like they might disappear beneath me. For the rest of the night, I didn't move. I didn't tell anyone what happened. Who would believe me? The next morning, when my shift ended, I walked out of that place and never looked back. Story 2. I used to be a Marine, stationed at the Beirut Bombing Memorial in North Carolina. The place was more than just a tribute to fallen comrades. It was sacred ground. Part of it included an old veterans cemetery with graves dating back to the Civil War. My usual post was the graveyard shift, which meant hours of solitude patrolling the memorial grounds, the cemetery, and the dense woods that bordered the site. Most people would find it eerie, being alone in a cemetery in the middle of the night. For me, it was strangely peaceful. The air felt different out there, like it was alive with something ancient. On clear nights, the moonlight would spill across the rows of headstones, and the woods would be filled with the sounds of crickets and rustling leaves. But one night, everything changed. It was around 2 a.m., the dead of night. I was doing my usual rounds, flashlight in hand, patrolling near the perimeter fence where the oldest headstones were. The air was colder than usual, sharp enough to sting my face. The trees on the edge of the cemetery cast long, skeletal shadows, and the wind made the branches creak like whispers. That's when I heard it, a faint humming. At first, I thought it was the wind, but the sound was too melodic, too deliberate. It was a woman's voice, soft and haunting, carrying through the stillness. I stopped dead in my tracks, heart thudding in my chest, straining to hear. The humming grew louder, weaving through the trees like it was alive, pulling me toward it. "Hello?" I called out, my voice sounding smaller than I intended. No answer, just the humming. My pulse quickened as I scanned the area with my flashlight. The beam caught on gnarled tree trunks and tangled vines, but no sign of anyone. Still, the sound seemed to be coming from somewhere just ahead, near the largest tree in the cemetery, a towering oak that had stood there for centuries. As I moved closer, something caught my eye, a faint blue glow seeping through the thick curtain of vines that wrapped around the base of the tree. It pulsed softly like a heartbeat, and the humming grew louder with every step I took. I could feel it then. The air around me was charged, like the crackle before a lightning strike. My skin tingled and the hair on my arm stood on end. It wasn't just fear, it was something else, something I couldn't explain. With my flashlight trembling in my hand, I reached the tree and pushed aside the vines. What I saw nearly stopped my heart. Behind the brush was an old weathered headstone, the marble cracked and worn with age. A large cross was etched into its surface. But the cross wasn't just carved. It was glowing. A vivid, electric blue light emanated from the stone, so bright it illuminated the surrounding branches in an otherworldly halo. The humming was deafening now, no longer a single voice, but a chorus, hundreds of voices overlapping in perfect harmony. It filled the air, pressing against my skull, vibrating through my chest. I stumbled back, my mind racing for an explanation. Was it some kind of prank? A trick of the light? But deep down, I knew this was no ordinary phenomenon. There was something ancient, something alive in that glow. And then it happened. The glow intensified, flaring so brightly I had to shield my eyes. The humming turned into a low, guttural moan that seemed to come from...
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, powered by BetterHelp.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
From the ground itself, the air grew colder, biting at my skin, and I swear I could feel something moving beneath my feet in the earth. I don't know how long I stood there, frozen in place. Seconds? Minutes? All I know is that when I finally snapped out of it, pure instinct took over. I screamed. I screamed louder than I ever had in my life, the sound tearing out of my throat as I turned and bolted. My flashlight clattered to the ground, forgotten, as I sprinted through the cemetery, not daring to look back. The chorus of voices seemed to follow me, growing fainter with each step but never disappearing entirely. When I reached the parking lot, I dove into the cab of my truck, locking the doors and fumbling for the radio. My hands were shaking so badly I could barely hold it. "Jackson," I stammered, calling the guy who was supposed to relieve me at 4 a.m. "I need you to come in. Now." There was a pause on the other end, and then his groggy voice crackled through. "What the hell, man? It's the middle of the night. Just get here, please." Something in my tone must have convinced him, because 15 minutes later, his truck pulled into the lot. I practically dragged him out of the driver's seat, muttering something about the cemetery, the light, the voices. He gave me a look that said he thought I was losing it, but I didn't care. "I'm not going back out there," I told him, my voice trembling. "Not until it's daylight." He rolled his eyes but stayed in his truck for the rest of the night. Neither of us said much after that. I quit the job a week later. Story 3. I was stationed in Okinawa, Japan, a place that was both stunningly beautiful and utterly isolating. I was a corporal at the time, and our unit had been assigned a week of intensive training at the Jungle Warfare Training Center, or JWTC as everyone called it. A humid, dense maze of green, it was the kind of place that gnawed at you, the way the jungle seemed alive, constantly watching. Our barracks were crude shelters deep in the thicket, a place where you couldn't see more than a few feet ahead without feeling the weight of the foliage closing in. Nights were eerily quiet, except for the constant hum of insects and the occasional rustle of some unseen animal. I was used to long, grueling nights from my time as a security guard, but there was something about JWTC that felt different, heavy. That particular night started like any other. We were worn out from a full day of drills and exercises, drenched in sweat and mud. By 2:30 a.m., most of us were racked out, hoping to catch a few hours of sleep before it started all over again. I wasn't sleeping, though. I was on fire watch. It was quiet, save for the buzz of crickets and the occasional snort of someone rolling over in their cot. At first, I thought I imagined it, a faint noise carried on the thick night air, almost indistinguishable. I paused, listening, my flashlight cutting through the murk outside the barracks. Then it came again, louder this time, a scream, not just any scream. It was high-pitched, agonized, and distinctly human. It sounded like a woman, her voice splitting the humid darkness with a terror that froze the air in my lungs. My first thought was that one of the instructors was playing a prank. JWTC instructors were infamous for their twisted sense of humor. But this was too real, too raw. "Did you hear that?" someone whispered behind me. It was Davies, one of the younger guys. His face was pale in the dim light of my flashlight. Before I could answer, the scream came again, this time closer, more guttural, and ending in an abrupt, wet choke. The barracks erupted. Guys were sitting bolt upright in their cots, some scrambling for their boots or weapons. Our lieutenant, Lieutenant Ramirez, burst in from the adjoining room, his face stern but visibly shaken. "Everyone, gear check," he barked. "Sound off." We scrambled to comply, shouting out our names and positions. Ramirez was already on his radio, calling up the training center. "This is Bravo Company. We've got a possible..." He paused, his brow furrowing. "What the hell do you mean it's nothing? Someone just screamed out here, goddammit." The static-filled reply was muffled, but I caught bits of it. Something about this being not the first time, and no reports of civilians in the area. Ramirez didn't look convinced. "We're doing a sweep," he said, more to himself than us. He turned to a couple of the sergeants. "Stay with the men. Nobody leaves this barracks unless I say so. I'm heading to the instructor compound." "Lieutenant, you really think..." one of the sergeants started, but Ramirez cut him off with a sharp look. "I don't know what the hell I think," he said grimly. Then he disappeared into the night with a flashlight and sidearm. For what felt like hours, but was probably only 20 minutes, we sat in tense silence, ears straining for any sound. The jungle around us seemed unnaturally quiet, as if the scream had snuffed out even the nocturnal life. Then came the crunch of boots on dirt, and Ramirez reappeared. Behind him were two instructors, their faces stoic but guarded. "We did a perimeter check," one of them said flatly. "Didn't find anything. No tracks. Nothing out of place." "What about the scream?" Davies piped up. "We all heard it." The instructors exchanged a glance, one of them shifting uncomfortably. "It happens sometimes," the second one said, his tone carefully neutral. "We've had other units report similar sounds. Never found a source. Probably just an animal." "An animal?" I blurted out before I could stop myself. "That didn't sound like any animal I've ever heard." The instructor didn't answer. Instead, he gave Ramirez a curt nod and started to walk away. "That's it?" Ramirez called after him. "You're just brushing it off?" "Advice, Lieutenant," the first instructor said over his shoulder. "Don't go looking for things out here that you don't want to find." We didn't sleep that night. Nobody did. Story 4. I've never been one to believe in the supernatural. I was a Marine, trained, disciplined, and grounded in reality. But something happened one night during a rooftop post that I can't explain. It was a quiet night shift overseas. The air was heavy with humidity, the kind that clung to your skin and made even the smallest movement uncomfortable. I was stationed on a rooftop with Torres, a fellow Marine I'd known for a few years. The building was an old, worn structure, its concrete walls cracked with age. From our position, we had a decent view of the surrounding area, including another rooftop about 20 yards away. It was past midnight, the time when exhaustion creeps in no matter how alert you try to stay. Torres and I were leaning against the low wall that circled the roof, scanning the area in silence. The only sound was the occasional breeze and the distant hum of crickets. That's when I saw him. A man stood on the adjacent rooftop. He was tall, his figure outlined against the faint moonlight. He wasn't moving, just standing there, staring straight ahead. At first, I thought he might be one of ours, maybe someone from a different unit pulling guard duty. But something felt off. The man lit a cigarette, and the brief flare of the flame illuminated his face for just a second. He looked ordinary, too ordinary, like someone who didn't belong in this environment. He wasn't wearing a uniform, just a plain white shirt and dark pants. I nudged Torres. "Hey, check that out," I whispered, pointing toward the man. Torres turned, squinting in the direction I indicated. "Where?" "There on the rooftop," I said. But when I looked back, the man was gone. Gone. The roof access door on that building was old and rusted. We'd heard it squeal like a dying animal earlier in the day when someone opened it. There was no way he could have used it without us hearing. And it wasn't like he could have just jumped down. There was nothing nearby to land on without breaking every bone in his body. "You sure you saw someone?" Torres asked, his voice a mix of skepticism and unease. "I'm not imagining things," I said firmly. "I saw him." Torres scanned the rooftop with his scope, his jaw tight. "Well, he's not there now." We both fell silent, listening intently for any sound that might explain the man's sudden disappearance. But there was nothing. Just the wind brushing against the cracked concrete and the distant rustle of trees. "I don't like this," Torres muttered. Neither did I. We decided to keep an eye on the other rooftop, just in case. Minutes turned into hours and the rest of the night passed without incident. By the time dawn broke, the uneasiness I'd felt had dulled, but hadn't disappeared. It wasn't until we returned to base that things got stranger. I casually mentioned what I'd seen to one of the guys who'd been there longer, hoping he might have some logical explanation. He went pale. "You saw him?" he asked, his voice barely above a whisper. "Who?" I asked, my stomach tightening. "The guy with the cigarette," he said. "You're not the first to see him." I stared at him, waiting for him to laugh or say he was messing with me. But he didn't. "What do you mean?" I asked, my voice sharper than I intended. He leaned in closer, his expression deadly serious. "A few years ago, a local worker fell off one of those rooftops, died on impact. They say he was out there taking a smoke break. Ever since then, people have reported seeing someone up there. Sometimes he's standing, sometimes he's sitting on the edge, smoking. But he's always gone by the time you get a second look." I felt a chill run down my spine. "You're saying I saw a ghost?" "I don't know what you saw," he said, his eyes darting around as if he didn't want anyone else to hear. "But you're not the first." I didn't know what to say. I didn't believe in ghosts. Hell, I still don't. But I know what I saw, and I know it wasn't my imagination. That night has stuck with me ever since. Story 5. It was back in 2015 when I was stationed at the National Training Center. For those who don't know, the NTC is like a proving ground for the U.S. Army. It's massive, spanning miles of desert, and during rotations it turns into a chaotic simulation of war. Thousands of soldiers, endless vehicles, non-stop radio chatter. I'd been through a few rotations before, but this one left a scar on my mind. I was assigned to the security detail that night, stationed at one of the outposts on the edge of the mock battlefield. The desert had its own way of being eerie. During the day, it was scorching and loud, with tanks rumbling, helicopters slicing through the air, and constant drills. But at night, it was a whole different beast. The stars lit up the sky, brighter than I'd ever seen. But the stillness of the desert made your skin crawl. And when you're out there in the dark, with just a radio and an M4 for company, your mind starts to play tricks on you. It started like any other night. I'd been sitting in the Humvee, watching the battle unfold in the distance. The radios buzzed nonstop with commanders barking orders, the crackle of simulated artillery, and the occasional voice checking in. Even from where I was, I could hear the faint hum of engines and the clatter of boots on the ground. It was organized chaos, like always. Then it happened. At first, it was just a faint glow. I spotted it out of the corner of my eye, low on the horizon. It wasn't unusual to see flares or lights in the desert during these rotations, but something about this light felt off. It wasn't stationary like a flare, nor did it flicker. It was steady, and it seemed to pulse ever so slightly like a heartbeat. I grabbed my binoculars and focused in. "What the hell is that?" I muttered to myself. The light grew brighter, and I could see it moving now, smoothly, almost unnaturally. It wasn't like any aircraft I'd seen. It wasn't a helicopter, and it sure as hell wasn't a jet. It moved too slowly for either, gliding through the sky like it didn't belong to this world. I reached for the radio. "This is Outpost Bravo," I called in, trying to keep my voice steady. "We've got a visual on an unidentified light in the western sector. Anyone else seeing this?" The radio crackled, but there was no response. That was odd. The chatter had been constant just moments ago. I tried again. "Command, this is Bravo. Do you copy?" Nothing. And then I realized something that made my blood run cold. The battlefield had gone silent, completely silent. No engines, no shouting, no gunfire. Even the radios, which were always alive with activity, had gone dead. It was like someone had flipped a switch and turned the world off. I stepped out of the Humvee, my boots crunching softly against the desert sand. The light in the sky was closer now, hovering over the battlefield like it was watching us. It was enormous, much larger than I'd initially thought, and it emitted no sound. No hum, no whir, just silence. I felt the hair on the back of my neck stand up. I wasn't alone. A few other soldiers from nearby posts had gathered, staring up at the light with the same mix of awe and terror. One of them, a young private named Miller, whispered, "What the hell is it?" "No clue," I replied, my voice barely above a whisper. "But it's not one of ours." The light suddenly shifted, moving in a way that defied logic. It made a sharp 90-degree turn, as if the laws of physics didn't apply to it. The movement was so precise, so deliberate, that it felt like whatever was controlling it knew we were watching. "Did you see that?" Miller hissed, his face pale. "Yeah," I said, my heart pounding. The light hovered for a moment longer, then began to split. It was like watching a cell divide under a microscope. One light became two, then three. Each moved independently, darting across the sky in patterns that no human aircraft could replicate. And just as suddenly as it had appeared, the lights vanished, leaving nothing but an empty sky. The silence lingered for what felt like an eternity. Slowly, the sounds of the battlefield returned. Engines revving, voices over the radio, the faint thud of simulated explosions. It was like the world had resumed its course, as if nothing had happened. But we knew better. Story 6. When I was stationed in Groton, Connecticut, attending basic enlisted submarine school, part of my duty included roving the barracks at night. I worked the night shift a lot, patrolling the empty halls while everyone else slept. Those nights were usually uneventful, checking fire extinguishers, ensuring doors were secured, that kind of thing. But there was one night I'll never forget. I had a new guy under instruction that night, showing him the ropes. It was quiet, the way it always was at 200, with nothing but the hum of fluorescent lights and the occasional creak of the building settling. The barracks were old, built decades ago, and they had that distinct, musty smell of aged wood and industrial cleaner. My UI was chatty at first, asking questions about what to check and how to check it. But after a while, he went quiet. I figured he was just settling into the monotony. On the second floor, there was a recreation room, a place with a few chairs, a TV, and a piano that looked like it hadn't been played in years. I'd passed it 100 times during other patrols, but that night, something made me stop. I turned to my UI and said, "Let's check in here for a minute." He raised an eyebrow but didn't say anything as I opened the door. The room was dimly lit by the exit sign in the hallway, casting just enough light to make out the outline of the piano against the far wall. I walked over to it, running my fingers over the dusty keys. It had been years since I'd touched a piano, but muscle memory kicked in, and I plunked out a few notes. Nothing fancy, just enough to remind myself how it felt. "Didn't know you played," my UI said, his voice low. "Barely," I admitted, smiling. "Used to mess around on one as a kid." We didn't linger long. After a minute or two, I closed the cover over the keys and we continued down the hall. That's when it happened. In the middle of our conversation, as we passed a row of dorm rooms, we both froze. A single piano note echoed down the hall behind us. Soft, but unmistakable. It wasn't the creak of a door or the groan of the building. It was deliberate. A low, sustained note. I turned to my UI, who was already staring back at me, wide-eyed. "You heard that, right?" I asked, though I already knew the answer. He nodded, his face pale. "Yeah, I heard it." We stood there for a moment, listening, but the hall was silent again. After a few seconds, I forced a chuckle, trying to shake off the creeping unease. "Old building," I said. "Probably just the wood settling or something." "Yeah," he muttered, though he didn't sound convinced. We started walking again, this time a little faster. The end of the hall was just ahead, where the door to the stairwell waited. I reached for the handle, ready to put some distance between us and that room, when the sound came again. But this time, it was different. It was sharp, jarring, a high note struck with force, the kind of sound that makes your spine stiffen. And it was closer, coming from the same direction as the piano. We froze, staring at the hallway behind us. My mouth was dry, my heart pounding in my chest. The air felt heavy, suffocating, like the building itself was watching us. My UI whispered, "That wasn't the building." I didn't respond. I couldn't. All I could think about was how impossible it was. The barracks were silent when we arrived. Everyone was asleep. No one could have been in that room. Without another word, I yanked the door open, and we bolted down the stairs. I didn't care about protocol or finishing the patrol. My gut told me to leave that floor, and I wasn't about to ignore it. We reached the ground floor and stepped into the empty common area, both of us breathing hard. For a moment, we just stood there staring at each other. My UI looked like he wanted to say something, but no words came out. Finally, I broke the silence. "You stay here," I said.
I'm going to report this. He nodded, his hands trembling slightly. I left him there and went to the duty office, where the petty officer of the watch was sitting, half asleep. I didn't tell him everything, just that we'd heard some unusual noises and wanted to check the security footage. He gave me a skeptical look, but pulled up the feeds anyway. When he played back the recording from the second floor hallway, my blood ran cold. At first, it was just the empty hall, the faint glow of the exit sign at the far end. But then, as the footage reached the time we were on that floor, the piano room door moved. It wasn't much, just a slow, deliberate shift, like someone had pushed it from the inside. And then, a second later, the door was still again. No one entered. No one left. The petty officer frowned, leaning closer to the monitor. "That's strange," he muttered. I didn't say anything. What could I say? That I thought we'd encountered something unexplainable? Something not of this world? I kept my mouth shut and asked him to log the incident, which he did reluctantly, probably thinking I was overreacting. I didn't sleep that morning when my shift ended. I avoided the second floor for the rest of my time at Groton. Some things aren't meant to be explained. Story 7. I've seen and done things I'll carry with me to the grave. The Marines, especially in Taiwan, aren't for the faint-hearted. I served as a drill sergeant for years, training fresh recruits to survive, to fight, and, if necessary, to die. The jungles, the mountains, the oppressive humidity, those are things you expect. What you don't expect are the shadows that follow you long after the day's duties are done. The base where I was stationed had a reputation. Not officially, of course. On paper, it was just another military installation tucked into the dense, unyielding terrain. But if you asked anyone who had served there for more than a few months, they'd lower their voice and tell you the rumors. That it had been built over a mass grave. That strange things happened at night. That you should never, under any circumstance, wander too far alone after dark. I didn't pay much attention to stories when I first arrived. I was a no-nonsense type of guy, not one to scare easily. But I'll tell you this, I learned. And I learned the hard way. It started with the firing range. Recruits hated night guard duty, and I couldn't blame them. Staring out at a pitch-black field dotted with target dummies shaped like enemy soldiers, it's enough to play tricks on your mind. One morning, a young guard came to me, pale as a ghost, trembling. "Sergeant," he said, his voice barely above a whisper, "something happened last night." I folded my arms, unimpressed. "Spit it out, soldier. What did you see? A rat? A shadow?" He shook his head violently. "No, sir. It was one of the targets. I swear to God, I saw it move." I raised an eyebrow. "Move?" "Yes, sir. It laid down its rifle." His voice cracked. "And it spoke." "Spoke?" Now he had my attention. "It said, 'Damn, I'm tired.' Just like that." Clear as day. The kid looked ready to faint. I sent him off to rest, chalking it up to fatigue or nerves. But that night, I made a point to walk past the firing range myself. I stood there, staring at those lifeless clay figures for what felt like an eternity. They didn't move, didn't speak. Still, the silence felt too heavy, too charged. I left quickly, telling myself it was nothing. But deep down, I wasn't so sure. One evening, I decided to go snake hunting, a little pastime I'd picked up. The snakes come out at dusk, slithering over the warm earth as the day's heat fades. I grabbed my flashlight, a sturdy stick, and a bag and headed out. The field stretched wide and empty, the distant hum of the forest barely audible. I worked my way in a zigzag pattern, scanning the ground. After a while, I noticed I was heading toward the old outhouse. It was a decrepit thing, long abandoned and too far from the main base to be practical. People joked it was cursed, but I'd never paid it any mind. Until that night. As I got closer, something shifted in the air. A heaviness settled over me, pressing down on my chest. My instincts screamed at me to turn back, but I ignored them. I was a Marine, damn it. Then my flashlight flickered and died. "Piece of junk," I muttered, smacking it against my palm. It didn't come back on. I turned to head back to the base, annoyed. But as soon as I faced away from the outhouse, the flashlight flickered back to life. Curious, I turned back toward the outhouse. It went dark again, faced the base, light. Face the outhouse, dark. I tried this two or three times, my pulse quickening with each test. By the third time, my hands were shaking. I took a deep breath, forcing myself to stay calm. "I'm sorry," I said aloud, my voice firm but respectful. "I didn't mean to intrude." With that, I turned and walked back to the base, my flashlight working perfectly the entire way. I didn't look back. The real terror came a few weeks later. A soldier went missing. It wasn't unheard of. Sometimes someone would get lost or wander too far. But as the hours passed and the rain began to fall, the tension in the air grew thick. We organized a search party, combing the forest and surrounding terrain until nightfall. We found him the next morning. He was huddled in a cave, soaked to the bone, his eyes wide and unseeing. He didn't speak, didn't respond to questions. It was as if he'd been broken. We never found out what happened to him. They shipped him out the next day, and we never heard from him again. Story 8. I'll never forget that night in Afghanistan, no matter how much I've tried to push it out of my head. I was deployed with my infantry unit in Helmand Province, a barren, desolate region that stretched into the horizon like it wanted to swallow you whole. We'd been out on a mission for 2 weeks, sleeping in holes we dug ourselves, barely eating, constantly on edge. That night was supposed to be like all the others. Long, dark, and quiet except for the distant echoes of gunfire or the occasional buzz of insects. But this was something different. I can't explain it, but I felt it before it happened, like a low hum in my chest that wouldn't go away. I had just crawled into my fighting position, a makeshift foxhole I'd spent hours digging into the rocky soil. The night was cold, the kind of cold that creeps into your bones and refuses to leave, no matter how many layers you have on. I wrapped myself in my poncho liner and pulled my rifle close, the barrel still warm from the day's patrol. My boots, still on, were sticking out of the hole slightly, too exhausted to care. The wind picked up, howling low and mournful. There was no moon that night, just an endless expanse of black. I lay there, staring at the sky, trying to find a single star. I don't know how long I was awake before I finally drifted off. Then I felt it. At first it was subtle, a light pressure against the sole of my foot. I thought it was a rat or maybe one of those damn desert foxes. We'd seen them before, scavenging through the trash we left behind. I twitched my foot to scare it off, but the pressure didn't go away. Instead, it grew sharper, like tiny teeth testing the leather of my boot. I jolted awake, my heart slamming against my ribs. I kicked out instinctively, my boot connecting with something soft but solid. There was a grunt, not human, not animal, just wrong. I scrambled to sit up, grabbing my rifle, the safety already off, and pointed toward my feet. My breath came out in harsh, panicked gasps as I scanned the darkness. And then I saw it. It was crouched on the edge of my foxhole, just barely illuminated by the faint red glow of my headlamp. At first I thought it was a kid, maybe a starving Afghan child who had wandered too far from their village. But the proportions were all wrong. Its limbs were too long, its skin pale and slick, almost like it was wet. The head was oversized, bulbous, with eyes that shone like wet glass, reflecting the faint light. It didn't move, it just squatted there, staring at me, its mouth slightly open to reveal jagged yellow teeth. The smell hit me next, a rancid, sour stench that made my stomach churn. I froze, my finger hovering over the trigger, unable to make sense of what I was looking at. It didn't feel real, it couldn't be real. And then it smiled. That smile, God, I'll never forget it. The corners of its mouth stretched impossibly wide, splitting its face in half. Its teeth clicked together, a sickening sound that echoed in the pit of my stomach. I wanted to scream, but my voice was caught somewhere in my throat, choking me. My hands trembled so hard I thought I might drop the rifle. I don't know what possessed me to do it, but I flipped the light on my headlamp to its brightest setting and aimed it directly at the thing. The sudden burst of light seemed to startle it. It let out a low, guttural hiss and scrambled backward, moving on all fours like a spider. Its movements were jerky, unnatural, as if it didn't belong in its own body. It stopped a few feet away, just beyond the reach of the light. I could see its silhouette now, hunched and quivering, its head cocked to the side like it was trying to decide what to do next. And then, just as quickly as it had appeared, it turned and darted off into the darkness. It moved so fast I barely registered it was gone until the silence swallowed me. I sat there, rifle still raised, my breath coming in sharp, ragged bursts. My hands were slick with sweat, and my heart felt like it was trying to claw its way out of my chest. I wanted to call out to the rest of my squad, but what the hell would I say? That I'd seen some thing? I didn't even believe it myself. I didn't sleep the rest of the night. I stayed in that hole, my rifle trained on the darkness, waiting for it to come back. It never did. Story 9. The air was biting that night, sharp as a blade against my face. I had been stationed in Arlington National Cemetery for months, cataloging graves under the soft glow of moonlight. It was quiet work, the kind that demanded precision but offered solitude, a strange mix of reverence and eeriness. I didn't mind. Solitude was something I'd grown accustomed to in the Army. That night, however, was different. We were a small team of three spread out across one of the older sections of the cemetery. Rows upon rows of headstones stretched out like an endless sea, their etched names barely visible in the dim light. My flashlight skimmed over each one as I recorded the details onto a clipboard. The air felt heavy, though. Heavier than usual, like the weight of all those names was pressing down on us. Some of the tomb guards, the soldiers who watched over the tomb of the unknown soldier, had told stories, whispers about phantom footsteps and shadowy figures. I had always brushed it off as the kind of lore that comes with a place steeped in so much history. Still, the stories lingered in the back of my mind that night, like a splinter I couldn't quite dislodge. "Rodriguez, you good over there?" I called out, my voice low but sharp against the silence. "Yeah," he replied from somewhere behind me, his tone casual. "Just finishing up this row." The third member of our team, Stafford, had wandered ahead earlier, working faster than the rest of us. I caught a glimpse of his figure up near the ridge, where the headstones were older, their inscriptions faded with time. His silhouette was unmistakable, broad shoulders, slightly hunched as he leaned over a grave. "Stafford," I shouted, my voice cutting through the stillness. "Wait up, man." He didn't respond. Instead, he turned slightly, his movement stiff, almost mechanical, before stepping out of view behind a large oak tree. Annoyed, I picked up my pace. "Rodriguez," I muttered over my shoulder, "let's catch up to Stafford before he gets too far ahead." But before I could take another step, Rodriguez's voice came again, this time from directly behind me. "Stafford's not up there, man. He's with me." I froze. I turned slowly, my flashlight beam sweeping across the ground until it landed on Rodriguez. He was standing about 20 feet behind me, his clipboard under one arm, a confused look on his face. "What are you talking about?" I asked, my throat tightening. Rodriguez frowned. "He's over here. We were just..." I didn't wait for him to finish. I spun back toward the ridge, my heart hammering. The figure I'd seen, Stafford or whoever it was gone. The space where they had been standing was empty, save for the looming shadow of the oak tree. "Stafford!" I shouted again, this time louder, the urgency in my voice undeniable. From somewhere to my left, I heard a faint reply. "What's up?" The voice was distant but clear. I swung my flashlight in the direction of the sound and spotted Stafford emerging from a completely different section of the cemetery, his hands stuffed in his pockets. He looked at me quizzically, as if I'd just interrupted him in the middle of something mundane. "What the hell are you doing over there?" I barked, my frustration mixing with a growing unease. Stafford shrugged. "Working. Same as you." I felt my stomach drop. I knew what I had seen, or at least I thought I did. But now, with both Stafford and Rodriguez accounted for, I couldn't explain it. My rational mind scrambled for an answer. Maybe it was a trick of the light, or maybe exhaustion was playing games with my eyes. The alternative was unacceptable. "You okay, man?" Stafford asked, stepping closer. "Yeah," I lied, swallowing hard. "Just thought I saw someone else up there." "Someone else?" Rodriguez echoed, his tone uneasy. "Like who?" "I don't know," I admitted, the words feeling heavy as I spoke them. "It looked like you, Stafford. Same build, same..." Don't, he cut in, his voice sharper than I expected. Don't start with that. I wanted to press him, but the look in his eyes stopped me. It wasn't fear exactly, but something close to it. A flicker of recognition, maybe, like he knew something he wasn't ready to say. The rest of the night passed in tense silence. None of us mentioned what had happened, but I could feel the weight of it in every glance, every hurried movement. When we finished our work and returned to the barracks, I tried to shake it off, telling myself it was nothing. Just shadows. Just my mind playing tricks. But as I lay in bed that night, staring at the ceiling, I couldn't help but replay the moment over and over. The way the figure had moved, so deliberate, yet unnatural. The way it had disappeared without a sound. And most of all, the way Stafford had reacted when I told him what I'd seen. I never brought it up again. Not with Rodriguez, not with Stafford, and certainly not with the tomb guards. Story 10, I was stationed in Michigan with the Coast Guard, part of a team tasked with maintaining and decommissioning old lighthouses across the Great Lakes. By the time we arrived at the Presque Isle Light, it had long been automated, the human keepers replaced by machines. My crew was there to remove the Fresnel lens, a delicate and historically significant relic, to ship it to a museum. The stories about the place? We all knew them. Lights flickering on their own. Doors opening and slamming shut. Some said they'd heard the heavy footsteps of a keeper who died during a storm in the 1800s, still making his rounds. I brushed it off as old sailor tales. I'd spent enough time on the water to know that loneliness could twist your mind. It was late October, and the air carried a damp, bitter chill. I was the junior member of the crew, which meant I got the worst shifts. That night, I was alone inside the tower while the rest of the team prepped the lens for transport. The others worked in the keeper's quarters, their laughter muffled by thick brick walls. I was tasked with taking measurements at the top of the lighthouse, ensuring we had clearance to move the lens safely down the spiral staircase. The ascent was eerie. The iron steps groaned under my weight, and the sound echoed endlessly upward. As I climbed, my flashlight flickered. I smacked it against my palm, and the beam steadied. It wasn't until I reached the top that I noticed the light outside, thin, pale, and shimmering like heat waves on asphalt. I figured it was the reflection of the moon over Lake Huron, but then it moved. Not drifted like a boat or cloud, it darted, sharp and erratic. Probably swamp gas, I muttered, though I knew that made no sense here. Inside the lantern room, the massive Fresnel lens loomed like a glass cathedral. I couldn't shake the feeling that I wasn't alone. The air felt too still. My skin prickled, and my breath seemed to hang, frozen. I pulled out my tape measure and got to work, but the silence was oppressive. I found myself glancing over my shoulder every few seconds, certain I'd see someone behind me. That's when I heard it, a low rhythmic sound, a scrape, then a drag. Scrape. Drag. It echoed from below, rising up the stairwell like a slow heartbeat. I froze, holding my breath. The sound didn't stop, growing louder and closer. My radio crackled to life. Garcia, you good up there? It was my chief's voice. Yeah, I lied, gripping the radio like a lifeline. Just finishing up. The scrape drag stopped. I waited, counting the beats of my heart, but the silence returned like a smothering blanket. I shoved the radio into my pocket and hurried through the last few measurements, refusing to look out at the lake. I was halfway down the stairs when the smell hit me, a sharp, acrid tang of salt and decay, like rotting seaweed mixed with burnt oil. I gagged, pulling my shirt up over my nose, and then I saw it. At first, I thought it was one of my crewmates standing at the base of the stairs, but the figure was too tall, its shoulders hunched at unnatural angles. It wore an oilskin coat, slick and glistening as though soaked in rain. But the face, God, the face, was nothing but a shadow. Not darkness like a lack of light, but a blackness that seemed to eat the air around it. Who's there? I demanded, my voice cracking. My flashlight flickered, then died, plunging the stairwell into darkness. The figure moved, not walking, but sliding, like smoke rising in reverse. It was halfway up the stairs before I could scream. My instincts kicked in, and I bolted back up the steps, nearly tripping in my panic. The sound returned. Scrape, drag, scrape. I could feel it gaining on me. the cold radiating off it like ice. I reached the lantern room and slammed the door shut, twisting the iron latch with shaking hands. My breath came in ragged gas, fogging the glass around the lens. I fumbled for my radio, pressing the button so hard I thought it might snap. "Chief, get up here now," I yelled, my voice breaking. "What's going on?" he barked back. "Just get up here." There was no response. I pressed my ear to the door, straining to hear. Nothing. The smell of salt and rot was gone, replaced by the faint metallic tang of blood. I wiped at my nose and my fingers came away red. Then the knocking started. It wasn't loud, just a soft, deliberate tap, 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 as though someone was testing the door's strength. I backed away, my heart slamming against my ribs. The lens behind me began to hum, a low vibration that rattled my teeth. The light outside pulsed, filling the room with an unearthly glow. And then the voice came, a whisper, raspy and wet, like words dragged from the bottom of the lake. "Keeper?" I don't remember much after that. The chief said they found me unconscious on the floor of the lantern room, the lens humming softly. My nose had bled enough to stain my uniform, and my flashlight was shattered. I spent the rest of the mission on edge, avoiding the tower whenever I could. Thanks for watching. Don't leave before leaving a like to this video. Also, hit the subscribe button to support my work. And as always, have a horrific nightmare, my dear.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look great. What have you been doing?
I found Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe the same active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s for 80 to 90% less without insurance. All of mine shipped right to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call #250 and say keyword care. That's care to #250.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.